Good afternoon. This is Chickie Fitzgerald, and this is the Executive Girlfriends Group. It is Friday, September 9th, and our guest today is Colleen Francis, who is calling in from Canada. Welcome, Colleen.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's so exciting to be here.
Well, it is great to talk to you, and I am really excited to hear about your book, but first I'd like to hear a little bit about you and what got you to the place where you wrote this book. Is this your first book? So just give us a little bit of a thumbnail about you.
Oh, sure. Well, 11 years ago, I started a sales consulting and sales training company called Engage Selling, and a few years into that, I was at a networking event, actually my industry association, the National Speakers event, and I met a guy who focused on communications, and he had written a book called Just Be Honest, which I thought was a great book. So I read it, loved it, and said to him, you know, we really should adapt this to salespeople, because my approach to sales training has always been be nice,
right.
Because people want to buy from people they like. And honesty, of course, is part of that. You know, so many salespeople get tarnished with that awful brush of, you know, the shyster, snake oil salesperson of, you know, days of yore. And so we have to work really hard to create these open, honest relationships. And so I thought it was time to put those thoughts together and write a book on how to build long-term open relationships that lead to great business profits.
Well, I'm always interested to hear also just kind of the process about how you went through this. So did you write the whole manuscript and then go out and seek a publisher? Did you self-publish? How did you actually get the book on the shelves?
That is a great question. And no.
And it's also the million-dollar question, right?
We wrote a proposal which felt like a manuscript.
Right.
So we did a pretty detailed proposal of chapters, summaries of the chapters. I think I might have written the introduction or one of the chapters, not in its entirety, and used an agent to shop the proposal around. We had a remote but somewhat existing relationship with one of the editors at Wiley just because of other authors that we knew, and we ended up accepting a deal from him, but we did shop it to a number of publishers and got, I think we ended up with three different offers.
Very nice. You know, it's so funny.
Yeah.
I interview, I would say half of my authors that I interview are from Wiley, and I don't know whether it's because their PR people are just more aggressive, because we typically look for our authors on Help a Reporter Out. And I think that the PR people that represent Wiley's authors are just, they must live on there, because I can't tell you how many of the authors tell me that they ended up going with Wiley.
Well, they also put, they're very good to authors, and, you know, they publish, they do a great job with their editing and their design, and they make the you know, the offer is pretty attractive as well. So I think they're doing a good job of getting out there and finding new authors and getting books published.
Well, I love the cover of your book. And
oh, thanks.
I'm always a sucker for that. I mean, I was telling our guest last week that, you know, I tend to buy wine that way too. You know, I stand in front of the shelves, and if I'm in the mood to try something new, I'm just a sucker for a great wine label, and I'm the same way with books. I'll go to the bookstore and you know, sometimes books just jump off the shelf, and people don't realize how critical that is. I have also seen some horror stories on book covers as well. So, speaking of horror stories, I was looking at your website, Honesty Sells, and your blog,
mm-hmm.
and noticed that one of the things that you do is to highlight horror stories as it relates to people who aren't selling honestly. And I think I'd actually like to start there, because you obviously had a bunch of those in mind so that you could come up with that. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I decided when we wrote the book, I mean, sure, I have my fair share of horror stories. I mean, I think most people do, unfortunately. But when I wrote the book, or as we were writing the book, I went out to a lot of clients to ask them, you know, tell me about a time when either you or you were, you know, you were lied to, or maybe in a, you know, moment of weakness, you did some lying.
Right.
And we started to collect these stories and compile them with our own personal experiences. And it's amazing when you start to share them how many other people say, oh, hey, that happened to me, or, oh, that happened to me, or, you know, oh, I hate it when that happens. And so we thought we'd put it right up front and just say, hey, you know what, let's reveal. I mean, chapter one of the book is the top 10 sales hall of shame. And, you know, there's some doozies in here. Everyone has their favorites, you know, and they range from consumer products to business products. It's always amazing to me how much lying has gone on. But, you know, if what was interesting is we didn't write the book because we believe that a lot of salespeople are lying, you know, point blank, you know, cold, hard lying. We wrote it because we really wanted to teach people how to build open relationships. As a result, we got these really great stories.
Right.
My favorite, which is just awful, came from a friend of mine who, he just runs an amazing sales business now, but his very first sales job was selling office equipment, lots
right.
of photocopiers. And his first big sale was to the Canadian Institute of the Blind, the CNIB. And when he came back to the office, his boss said to him, well, let's just ship them a used one because they'll never be able to see the difference.
Oh.
I mean, if that is not such an awful story of an unethical or dishonest sales manager, I don't know what it is.
Wow.
But the good news is Brent quit a couple of weeks later.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's... I know. The one that happened to me that I just loved, I laughed about this week. It was a blistering hot day here in Ottawa, probably 100 degrees in the summer, plus humid. And I got a random phone call from somebody, a telemarketer, asking me if I had received the free samples of raw beef that they had shipped me in the mail. I'm thinking, to them, it's 100 degrees out. Like, do you expect me to believe that you're sending raw beef in the mail? And of course, they weren't. They were expecting people to say, oh, no, I didn't get that. But of course, I'd like some. And then they'd say, oh, well, we have a truck in your area, which, you know, that whole deploy.
Wow.
But yeah, I just thought, this is bad.
Wow. So tell me, yeah, I mean, you start out the book with an introduction of, you know, why another book on sales? I mean, surely everything under the sun about sales has already been written. So why
yeah.
the honesty topic? And you know, as I looked at the title the first time, I thought, well, you know, isn't this obvious that, you know, in order to sell, you have to be honest? But clearly, because of these Hall of Shame members, it's not. So,
yeah.
You know, how do you use honesty and be genuine and not, you know, because when you tell somebody you're being honest, it smacks of being dishonest, right?
Yeah, isn't that ironic? Yes. you know, most people will at least say they believe the old adage, you know, that people buy from people they like. But still, you know, salespeople have to have a high drive and, you know, lots of enthusiasm and confidence, but they also have to be very goal-oriented. And unfortunately, what happens is a lot of people get into sales who are extremely goal-oriented, but they start putting their goals ahead of the relationship. They, you know, they strive to hit the money and they focus on the money so much that they actually put that ahead of the relationship, which then causes them to do things to win the sale in the short term, but erode the relationship in the long term. The other thing that I noticed as a salesperson, I was uncomfortable with it as a salesperson, but I didn't really know why until I started studying it as a consultant, is that the sales methodologies, the sort of popular sales methodologies that are out there, that preach a one-size-fits-all, you know, do step one, two, three, four, and five, or follow this formula, or A, B, and C, are inherently creating closed-off relationships. And I believe that they're inherently disingenuous because they put the methodology in front of the relationship. So what happens is a salesperson is sitting there thinking to themselves, oh, I better go to step five. But if the customer is, you know, already at step eight or still back at step two, they don't allow the customer to go back or the salesperson right. to go back and engage in the relationship. And so things erode. Sales go away because we're not in sync with the buyer and their personality. So honesty for me means, you know, sitting down and having a dialogue, treating the buyer like a peer and open-ended questions and leading questions to get this conversation started, but not being so focused on yourself that you're either shooting for the money and nothing else or so right. wedded to your methodology that you can't engage.
You know, I think it's so interesting that you say that because I see so many people, including myself, who I only get involved with, you know, products and services that I really, really believe in. And those things that I have built in my own companies, you know, I am the classic who is so in love with my product that quite often I'm so focused on that I'm not focusing on listening to the customer. And, you know, one of your chapters is about being honest with yourself. And I was wondering if it has to do with you know, seeing yourself in the same light that a customer sees you.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. When I was writing that chapter about being honest with yourself, you know, I was thinking about all the lies that salespeople tell themselves. You know, starting with my own sales career, you know, well, first of all, those people who are trying to sell products and services that they're not in love with, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, I've laughed with audiences and said, you know, it's like a vegetarian in a owning a butcher shop, right? You know, chances are they just, you know, they can't be, unless they're completely dysfunctional, a good salesperson because they don't live, you know, they don't believe in the product. How can you sell with passion? And passion
exactly.
and enthusiasm are so important. So there's that. But there's also the lies we tell ourselves in terms of what we have to do every day. You know, I used to sit at my desk when I was selling insurance, and I'd look at a stack of business cards, and I'd tell myself lies like, oh, I don't have to call them today. They'll still be at their desk tomorrow. They were almost like a security blanket for me, and so I stopped doing
right.
the work that needed to be done. You know, salespeople who forget that the sales they're getting today are a result of the hard work they did, you know, 6 months ago. And so if they stop doing that work, then 6 months from now, they won't have any sales.
Right.
You know, or I think the other big one is some salespeople get so enamored with their product, and I see this in the technology world all the time, that they just really believe that it will sell itself. It's the if we build it, they will come sort of methodology.
I have also selling. Resembled that remark.
Yeah, many of us have. You need to get the word out. You need to promote. You need to ask questions and find buyers. And so, you know, those are some of the things, some of the lies that people tell themselves. And then the big one is still many, many salespeople just don't understand the direct connection between your attitude and your performance, or your attitude and your sales results. And that's a big one. We often see salespeople, you know, we're notorious for our highs and our lows. And if we don't get really honest with ourselves about how that is affecting our ability to build relationships, then we will not ever succeed.
Right. And I suppose I should step back and ask a little bit about the premise about honesty being the best policy for closing sales and actually growing the business. Because, again, I know in my own life, I never, ever saw myself as a salesperson. But for the last 15 years, I've had a consulting firm. And, you know, every day I was having to sell my capabilities. But actually asking for the business and having, you know, honesty and a high degree of ethics as a part of our mantra of who we are as a company, I knew was important, but, you know, actually asking for the business and closing the business based on reputation is something I instinctively know is right, but obviously there is enough that you wrote a whole chapter about it. So tell me about that.
You have been reading the book. Well, there's, you know, there's a couple of things, and you know, it's interesting. You started by saying honesty is the best policy, and we got a lot of pushback on that. If I could just kind of take a step back for a second,
right?
Because some people believe that that isn't the case, that you shouldn't be honest all the time, and sometimes being honest is not right. Now, you know, you might not want to say, oh, you look terrible in those pants, or that color is ugly on you. You know, I don't believe that that's being honest. I believe that's being brutal. And being honest with someone doesn't mean you have to be cruel to them. but I think in sales, the most critical thing is to remember that, I mean, anything you do that could potentially erode the relationship limits your ability to sell, to have a long-term relationship with that client. We know that the secondary, third, fourth, fifth, sixth sale is the most profitable. And I really believe what my business mentor, Alan Weiss, says, which is think of the fourth sale first. So whenever I'm trying to close a piece of business, I think, what does this relationship look like in 4 years? So that's such an important thing. Yeah, I love that expression, thinking of the fourth sale first. So when we say, you know, honesty is the best policy, we truly mean that. And I do go in to say, yes, you know what, you can be successful in the short term lying to your prospects. There are car salespeople who lie. There are real estate agents who lie. There are software salespeople who lie. There are, you know, agricultural salespeople who lie. Some more blatant than others, and they get the business and they cash their checks, but they don't last very long. So, we don't advocate that, because as a business owner, especially, we want to make sure that that everything we do is building long-term profits. So that's the premise. Now, I got all wrapped up in the premise of your question, and I forgot what your actual end of the question was.
Well, it was just simply framed at actually using honesty to get you to the close and again, focusing on growing the business. But I think actually you answered it in the best possible way. And that one's going to stick with me, you know, because if you just said think about the next sale, well, that's different. But the fourth sale, I like that.
Yeah, and the other piece there is I think that we need to also remember that sometimes the best approach is to say no. Sometimes walking away or giving your customer an out is actually the best thing to do and the most honest thing to do. You know, most salespeople, and I have been notorious for this. This took me, you know, I would say 90% of my adult life today, it took me this long to learn, and that is really trusting your gut. In sales, I'm sure everybody who's ever sold anything who's listening to this show right now has had that feeling in their stomach where they think, you know, this is going to be a bad customer. Like, I really want this money, whether it's $100 or $100,000. This is like you're looking at the number and you're thinking, woohoo, ka-ching, you know, I can pay the mortgage, I can buy my Bentley, whatever it is. But there's that feeling in our stomach that we just know it's not the right fit. And lo and behold, we make the sale and we live to regret it. And we think, why didn't I? You know, it's taken me literally, you know, 41 years to realize I got to trust that gut because it always is right.
Yes. Oh, you're so right.
Yeah, you know, it can be costly for those of you listening who are, you know, in business for yourself. That is costly. I know that the money seems important at the time, but it can just suck the life out of you if you're not careful. So that's another piece of
exactly.
using honesty in the sales process.
And, you know, in consulting, which I've been in for 15 years, every single time I've got someone who makes me rewrite my work authorization more than just a couple of tweaks to the original document submitted to them, it's always a miserable client relationship after the sale. And I know that, and I should just, you know, by the second or third, I should just say, you know what, I don't think this is going to be a fit, because, you know, history always repeats itself on that front, that if they can't be happy with a proposal document, you know, chances of them being happy with the work is slim to none. You know what was occurring to me as I was hearing you talk about the sale and about the communication cycle. And I want to talk in a second about the hidden costs of communication breakdowns, which is one of your chapters that kind of jumped off the page at me. But before that, you know, you were saying those of you who sell, we also have a whole lot of people in our in the Executive Girlfriends group who are on the service side. And so they're the ones who have to live with the lie. Right?
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, and so I think some of the communication breakdowns, and again, this may not be what you were addressing in your chapter, but can be, you know, this whole tension that exists between the salesperson and the people who actually have to deliver. So maybe before we dive into the communication breakdowns, you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, it's... It is a challenge. You know, I like to say to people, don't create customer service problems for yourself. You know, or you're creating customer service problems, and especially in larger organizations where you've got, you know, the salesperson, and then things are handed off to service delivery. You know, if the salesperson can wash their hands and walk away, then and there's no ramifications, then
right.
You know, they're not being they're being incented to not care as much. You know, in organizations where the sales rep is paid for additional sales or add-on sales or repeat sales, then they do have a vested interest in making sure that relationship is maintained. So if I was someone in service or implementation or, you know, that after-sales support, if a customer said to me, well, you know, Bob said or Mary said this was the case, you know, I think the first thing that I would do is to say to them, thank you for bringing that to my attention. You know, I wasn't part of the initial call, and I certainly don't want to get wrapped up in the middle. Why don't I grab Mary right now, and we can work this out on the phone? Or, you know, you've got to get all parties together. Or you've got to say, let me go and check in with Mary, and we'll get back to you, and you need to go and deal with it in a non-confrontational way. You know, hey, Mary, I've got customer ABC on the phone, and this is what they're saying. And then we need to get, you know, either into a three-way conversation, or the resolution has to happen in email, where there now is some written backup. You know, it's interesting in a really great book on service called Setting the Table by Danny Meyer. Danny Meyer owns a number of restaurants in New York, very high end, and then a couple of great burger shacks in Florida and New York. He talks about service and how when you put something in front of the customer, if it's not right, you know, maybe the customer says, I ordered that medium rare, and it's not to their liking. Whether you're right or not as the service worker, the first thing you do is remove the offending object, because you can't solve the problem while the customer is looking at the mess in front of them. You know, and I thought that was such an interesting, you know, analogy. There's many things that you can do in the non-restaurant world that are the same way, and I think that one of the things we do is we thank them for bringing it to our attention, as opposed to saying, I'm sorry, which is what everyone expects us to say, which has no meaning, or try to fight them on it. You know, if we just say, thank you for bringing that to my attention, you know, I'm glad, or I appreciate you being honest, or I appreciate you being open with me so that we can resolve this for you, you immediately... you know, get them on side with you and working with you, as opposed to battling against you.
Very interesting. You know, it's easy to see that in the restaurant example of removing the offending object, but I think that it's a little bit less easy to see in a confrontational situation with a client. But you brought up something that I'd like to hit on, and again, I'd like to kind of delve into this communication breakdown issue and the cost of that, because you talked about the use of email. And I think you alluded to kind of documenting what is agreed to verbally. And, you know, yet we all know how easy it is for email as a vehicle for carrying information back and forth between people, how easily communication can break down even when we think we've written something really well and in a non-offensive way. I mean, I have a practice that if I've written an email more than a paragraph, I typically read it 3 or 4 times to, you know, try to put myself in the other person's shoes to see how they're going to receive it.
Good idea.
And still, you know, still it doesn't always work. So there is a cost to communication breakdown. So how did you hone in on that chapter?
Well, you know, to your point, just on this specific issue, I would never advocate trying to solve the problem by email. I think you have to do that on the phone and then say to them, great, so what I will do, you know, so we agree that A, B, and C are the resolutions. Customer verbally says yes. And say, so what I'm going to do is just put that in an email so you've got a copy of it and I've got a copy of it. So you already have their verbal agreement and sort of the language based on what you said on the phone. So then your email can be a little bit more casual. You're not still in the middle of the problem. It's, hey, you know, thanks so much for working with me on a resolution. I think I've got this right. What we agreed to do is step 1, 2, 3. You know, let me know if that's what you remember as well, or I just want, you know, double check that's what your assessment was. But you're guaranteed to have a positive result then, as long as you've got that verbal commitment on the phone. But don't try to hash it out over email. Oh, you're right, so bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's death. So speaking of death, my favorite chapter is actually the opposite of that. Be a life giver.
Oh, yes. I love this chapter. You know, people really resonate when I give them my, you know, simple fact, simple categorization of humans. You're either a life giver or a life sucker. And we all know who those life suckers are in our lives, because they're people that make us feel awful after interacting. In sales, I truly believe, you know, well, I could say this in sales, in service, in dating, you know, in our family, our friend relationships. If people don't feel better after interacting with you than they did when the interaction started, you are eroding the relationship, eroding rapport, eroding trust, and all of those things that cause people to want to be with you. So I think in sales, I would just say in life, we have to take 2 things into consideration. One, we need to align ourselves or associate ourselves with those people who make us feel better. We don't want to leave an interaction, whether it be a lunch, a party, or a business interaction, feeling, you know, exhausted, like we've had the life sucked out of us. Those people are not good for our spirit and our energy. But we also can't be that person. So we have to be somebody who gives life to others. We have to be someone who acts in a proactive way, who isn't a victim, who takes responsibility and, you know, and takes charge and gets things done. And we have to really focus on our likability.
Very, very good. Well, Colleen, the time has just absolutely flown by, and I want to be mindful of your time. But I would like to share just some of the names of the remaining chapters for our listeners. But, you know, again, I think you've just approached things so practically and such thought-provoking words you've used in your chapter title. So let me just share some of the rest of these. Getting the truth from everyone, referral selling, ensuring honest relationships from the start, getting the start of your selling relationship, getting started with an honest foot forward, close more sales by acknowledging your clients, the honest way to close more sales, more actions and questions, turning a one-time client into a lifetime client, and remembering to practice honesty internally. That one I bet we could have a whole call on that one. So why don't you just share a little bit from the last chapter, which is some final thoughts, and if you could just leave our listeners with some thoughts about why honesty sells, which is the title of your book.
Well, thank you. You know, I think that, you know, in business, whether you're in a selling, in, you know, you're a seller or a service person, or whether you just read a book like this for your own personal development, we have to remember that, you know, the best, richest, most profitable, and I don't just mean that from a money standpoint, but a most, you know, emotionally and spiritually standpoint, relationships come from those long-term relationships that we're developing. And we enjoy those people that we have the deepest relationships with. And so that's what being honest is all about. Nothing is worse to our own success, personally and professionally, to be incongruent with who we are, or to have thoughts and feelings gnawing away at us that we don't feel like we can communicate effectively to other people. And we certainly don't want to erode the relationships and leave, you know, a trail of bodies in our wake as we cut through our business or our personal lives. And so really that's why this book is important, I believe. And, you know, we put sort of everything that we had into it, but we really don't also believe that, you need to use everything. You know, don't go out and buy it and try to adopt every single chapter all at once, or you'll, you know, hurt yourself. But pick one or two things, you know, decide, well, I'm going to try chapter 9, the referral selling, that's so important to me, or I'm going to work on disassociating myself with the life suckers in my office. I'm going to stop one-upping people. I'm going to ask questions and be focused on my customers instead of being focused on myself. And I think that you'll find that you'll have tremendous business success. You know, if there's one premise that you could take from this book that I think could make a huge impact on your life personally and professionally, is this concept of not making assumptions. And the question, or the statement I like to say to people, and I'll leave you with, is, yeah, you know what, you might be right, but you might be wrong. And what is the cost of being wrong? So, you know, is it worth it just to ask a question, clarify that assumption, and move forward with the truth, as opposed to moving forward with what you think might be the truth?
Well, Colleen, I can't wait to read the rest of the book. And again, her book is Honesty Sells. And Colleen, what's the best place for them to find you?
Well, they can find us in a couple of places. EngageSelling.com is our website and my sales consulting practice. And of course, HonestySells.com is where we do some highlighting on the book, but the book is also available on our website, and so they can Google me or go to engageselling.com. I'm more than happy to take any questions or any comments about the book.
Well, great. We will do that. And for those members of the Executive Girlfriends Group on our private platform, Colleen has a profile, and we will make sure that all of her contact information is there for you in case you're listening to this on iTunes or when you're out for a walk in the morning, which we encourage people to do. And again, Colleen, thank you so, so much for your time. Do we have any questions? I know we have a couple of people listening live today, so I want to make sure if you do have any questions that you can go ahead and take advantage of Colleen being with us. Make sure to take your phone off of mute if you do.
Well, Colleen, I have no questions. This is Michelle. But
okay.
It sounds wonderful, and thank you for your time.
My pleasure. It was great to be here.
Coming from the timeshare background, honesty, you know, the whole industry has a reputation for being plagued with, you know, maybe not so honest relationships,
mm-hmm.
and it's wonderful just to hear and think about, you know, what those relationships are like, or, you know, what we can do with relationships and where the value is. So,
yeah, that's
very good.
You're right. Good, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, terrific. Anybody else? Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and turn off the recorded portion of the call. We do spend a little bit of time at the end of our Executive Girlfriends group call each week just catching up and hearing the high points of people's weeks. So, Colleen, you're welcome to stay with us, and any time you would like to join us for a Friday call, you are more than welcome.
Thank you very much.
Join us as a member of AG. I believe that Patty sent you the login information for our private platform, and
yes,
we use the same phone number every week. So I guess you'll have to use your cell phone from Canada.
I moved to Miami in about 6 weeks for the winter, so I'll be down in Florida. So it'll be easier.
Cool. Oh, well. Terrific, because I will probably be in Miami. Well, I'm definitely going to be in Miami in 2 weeks because I'm speaking at a user conference. But I get down there fairly frequently because I live in Tampa. So.
Oh, wonderful. Well, when you're down the next time, I won't be down until probably November 1st. But just, send us an email. It'll be fun to get together.
Definitely. All right. Well, again, I'm going to turn off the recording now, and I will be right back with everybody.